much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. Don't know much about geography. Don't know much trigonometry. Don't know much about algebra. Don't know what a sliding rule is for. But I do know one and one is two. And if this one could be with you, what a wonderful world this would be. Now, I don't claim to be an A student, but I'm trying to be. For maybe by being an A student, baby, I can win your love for me. Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. La ta 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 ta. History.
Hello.
Hello. This is Noah, Mona and Noah Save the World, and you are listening to 91.5 FM, WMFO, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio.
I'm so happy to be back in the studio after my trip last week.
It's been a while over Thanksgiving and all of that. It's been a while since you've been in.
That's such a good point. I didn't realize that. Yeah. Was last week the first week after Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
Wow.
And now that's all crazy. Almost over. This is our second to last show.
But we're excited.
Very, very
excited.
Who wants
to guess what we're talking about tonight? We'll give you some time to guess. We'll give you some time.
Beautiful opening song.
I love that song. That song is so cute. Okay, if you guessed education, you're correct. It's a pretty hefty topic. But
definitely.
We have some really interesting things to talk about.
Yes, yes, yes.
We are college students. So education is very relevant to us in our college lives. And I think there's so many different
things to talk about. Definitely.
I think one thing we started talking about is public versus private schools. Not that it's a versus thing, but public and private.
Well, I mean, in some ways it is a versus thing.
No one I tend to have, in this case, the same strong opinion.
Aware occurrence on the show.
Yes.
Mona and I agree on something.
But we both agree. We both are for the public schools.
Yeah.
We think public school. But you tell us now. Tell us about public school.
I mean, public school is just, it's just sort of more fair, I guess, and it's balanced and it's sort of
equal access.
Yes, equal access.
Access is the idea.
Yes, everybody. It should be fair when kids go to public school. Everybody has the same opportunities and chances to excel.
Of course, we also talked about how this is not always the case.
Yes, particularly because of how we fund our public schools.
Tell us, how do we fund our public schools?
Well, as I'm sure most of our listeners know, we use property taxes from the area around the school, which if you're in a wealthy community or like in Delaware, there's a high school by the beach with all these multi-million dollar beach houses that all their property taxes go to this one school, which is, having been in that school, such a nice school.
Wow.
Whereas, let's say you're just more in the middle of Delaware, it's more rural, there's a lot more farms about, maybe a small city, but not the wealthiest of cities, and then the high schools aren't awful, but I mean they're not nearly as sort of luxurious and probably don't have, I mean I thought my teachers were pretty high quality.
Aww, but good. I think it's hard because I did go to one of the best public schools in the country,
and might be a little biased.
The reason it was one of the best public schools in the country is because the property taxes in the town are really, really high.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard because for me the question is how how do we raise the quality of public school across the board without bringing down the quality of the really good public schools? Because I feel like it shouldn't be the case that we just say, okay, let's all kind of like meet somewhere in the middle and let's just have every school, you know, be okay. I feel like it should be the case that we're like, okay, how do we get every school to be really, really good? But of course, that's easier said than done.
Oh, definitely.
Of course. But I don't know.
My sort of take on it is that I think things would be better just to start if we collected property tax at a state level instead of a local level, so that sort of every school in the state was getting the same amount of funding. I mean, based on like how many students went there. Mm-hmm. So like you're still contributing semi-directly to your kids' education. But you also can't just live in this insulated, very wealthy neighborhood with your own school, and then all the areas around you are just so underprivileged and like lack all these opportunities.
I think that's a really good idea in theory, but then that does mean that the schools right now in states that receive a lot of funding from their local community aren't going to get that much funding and are going to have to make cuts. Which,
true.
And if you think about the people living in those towns with the high property taxes, and they're paying the high property taxes so their kids can go to a good school, but it's difficult.
Maybe, but I mean, then the flip side is that a school that like may have 40 students in a class like can now maybe hire another teacher.
True.
Which, I mean, if that means going from like 10 kids in a class to 15 instead of like...
Yeah, but I don't think it's just about classroom size.
True. I mean, it's like, do you have an arts program? Does your school have like a theater? Do you have
so
music
many
programs?
About arts and music programs. Oh my gosh. It's always my like choice of paper is to defend arts programs in school. So I've written a few.
I mean, I think there's a pretty clear cycle of poverty that exists in
there
the United
is.
States where, you know, you're in a like sort of low income area, and then you go to a non-ideal public school or a very underfunded public mm-hmm. school, and you don't get an amazing education, so you get stuck in a low paying job, and then the cycle just continues.
Yeah.
We need to find a way to break that. And I think everyone's like, education is the path out, which I mean, I agree. Mm-hmm. Like, education is how you make a change. So, and I mean, if we could just like gather a lot more funding. I mean, I think you proposed...
Well, I proposed reallocation of funding. Personally, I think when you look at how much money is going into the military versus how much is going into schools, it's not equal.
It's easy to pass a, like a multi, like, $1 million bill to, like, develop new missiles, but trying to get any type of money into a school is...
I think
an obstacle.
Money for the military is important. Like, I think, you know, at the end of the day, we need a military, supposedly. I mean, we do, unfortunately. We do. So, but at the same time, it's like, the amount of money we're spending on the military is crazy. And if we reallocated those funds into schools that need them, as opposed to, and I'm not saying, I'm saying some schools don't need them. Like, again, my public school is doing great.
It's sad.
Like,
it's taken
the
care
money
of
from the military. So if we reallocate some funds into the schools that really need them, personally, I feel like that could make a difference. And this is also, you know, this also prevents them. I think there will be a lot of people opposed to this. There's a lot of people opposed to change.
Yeah, always.
Especially the people who benefit from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I know, and I wrote a paper recently about, like community music programs, because so many schools can't afford music programs. And it was really interesting because these community music programs are just stepping in and, like, acting as the homework help and acting as, like counseling pretty much, you know, mm-hmm. like mentorship and also music. And it's interesting because obviously it's not a permanent solution to the lack of music and arts in public schools, but it is a really, really amazing
resource
kind of culture that's developed.
And it does so much more than just provide music. Which, I mean, Everybody knows, like, having arts in your school doesn't just mean that plays get to go on. It means that kids really get to have this more human experience, and, like, they create communities, and,
We love the arts. Yesterday, I was at a voice thing, and, you know, a student was singing beautifully, I may add, and my voice teacher went, what did she say? She said, "Isn't this amazing?" She said, "Here we are, listening to Strauss and Fauré, and people are sitting in their offices typing away at keyboards. People are sitting typing away, and here I am listening to Fauré." It was so beautiful. I was like, I loved it. I was like, you're right.
That is a lovely sentiment.
Okay, so here we are in college. We've been talking about public schools.
Yes.
Here we are in college. Mm-hmm. And the connector to these things is the college admissions process.
Well, I think before we go to that, we should cover different types of education, like sort of emotional education and emotional learning.
Oh.
Do you want to try to tackle that? Sort of piggybacking off of how the arts and, like, arts programs in schools can teach us so much.
I want to
highlight a song.
Okay, fine. Well, you should have said it before I went into
the
transition.
I had to organize things. I do apologize, Mona.
That's fine. Well, I tried my best.
We appreciate it. We appreciate
it.
Now, this is Pink Floyd's Another Brick in the Wall.
No dark sarcasm in the classroom. Teacher, leave them kids alone.
Children yelling about things.
Definitely. Just a good vibe. And sort of I think an understandable point. I mean, mm-hmm. especially in, like, middle school, elementary school, high school, you go, you learn all these sort of, like, here's history, here's math, here's science, here's English. Like, this is the information you need for your life. Like, oh, take it all, absorb it all. Like, take a test, forget it all. Mm-hmm. And then you're ready to face the world. And it's like, are we?
Interestingly, this does connect to what we were talking about with public and private school, because I think the counter argument against public school for people who can afford private school is that the public school system is very bureaucratic and you learn, you take a test, like what you said, mm-hmm. wherein a lot of private schools kind of try to go against that with, like, you know, we can just do whatever we want, let's just learn in a more creative X, Y, and Z way. So that's, I think that's really interesting, but again, it's not accessible.
Yeah.
But it is a, I mean, it's a good point because the public school system is very much like,
well, here's
standardized.
Yeah. And I think an interesting, like, idea is that when you have, as we were talking about sort of before, the, like, the really well-funded public schools, mm-hmm. they, like, do better. Like, they're not as dependent on, like, forcing all the kids to take standardized tests. They, like, depending on, like, how they're steered.
My very good public school was obsessed with standardized tests.
That's
so funny. I think that the issue that was addressed in the song about the, like, just kind of, like, take tests, learn, become molded into this kind of, you know, I think I think the idea that public school, or maybe even just the idea of school, kind of limits self-expression and kind of, you know, fits you into this mold, I think is true of both schools that are struggling and schools that are quote-unquote doing very well, because the way they measure if the school is doing very well are these standardized test scores. So the standardized tests are still very much kind of overemphasized.
I mean, because there is some capacity of funding that comes from standardized test scores.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, like, public schools don't need that money from standardized test scores, so they don't have to enforce taking standardized tests as much.
What?
I think that's one of the reasons. And, like, they just legally aren't obligated.
I thought public schools were legal. What kind of test are you talking about? Like the SAT or like state standardized tests?
Like, to some capacity, like, I think if your school does well on state standardized tests.
No. At least not in Massachusetts, you have to take the standardized tests. And in a way, it's like, you know, if your school does very well on these standardized tests, it's just more pressure to do very well. And it becomes more emphasized because it's like, well, our school always gets the best score on these standardized tests and always is ranked best in the state. So therefore, if you're bad at this standardized test, like, you're kind of like failing our school is the culture that gets communicated. I don't know how it's like in other states, but I don't think it's the case where it's
there's
like,
no funding. If like you, if you can hit higher, like if you can improve your scores by 20%, then like you get this boost in funding.
I always understood it as the schools who did worse on the tests got more resources and funding because
they need to, like, make up.
They need to make up for it, quote-unquote. Like,
mm-hmm.
So if you're a failing school, quote-unquote, and the state takes over your funding, that means that, you know, if you get below a certain amount on these test scores. So overall, I think that, you know, I'm taking a class on called Social Emotional Learning and Civic Education mm-hmm. next semester that I'm very excited
Yes, this
for.
Is what we actually and wanted to
yes,
talk about getting back.
We got derailed with the standardized testing because it's easy to get derailed with standardized testing because it's so overemphasized.
Very overwhelming.
You're right. Related to arts education, just overall social emotional learning skills
mm-hmm.
are not taught in our schools.
Not at all.
At all.
And yet that's such a... Every day, we, like, live with our emotions, and we live with our past, and we live with, like, thinking about our future. How many times a day do we deal with calculus? Or do we deal with, biology?
I took social psych this semester, and so many studies show that, like, empathy education leads to better grades, higher self-esteem, better friendships, better communication. It's really crucial to kind of becoming a more developed person, but I think a lot of people argue that the school system isn't designed to make you a better person. It's designed I'm not saying in a good way. I'm saying that's the criticism of the school system.
The schools only exist to like jam you with knowledge and then
again the criticisms of we read this essay called like Against School. It was wild. First of all, I thought it was wild. It was, like, so extreme, but my teacher was like, my teacher was like, you're having this strong reaction because you value education, because you should, but basically, like, the argument was that, you know, like, public school exists to, I keep saying fit you into a mold because I can't think of another way to express that, but, like, it exists just to kind of, like, squash the individually out of you and make you, like, a, like, public servant and kind of, I don't know, I'm not...
Does it really make us public servants?
Not public servants, I'm not explaining it well. I should give up because I'm not going
to
explain it well.
I understand, though. It makes you somebody who's, like, ready to go get a job or, like, ready to...
It doesn't, I'm saying, when we're talking about, oh, okay, this is what I'm trying to say. When we're saying, oh, why don't schools focus more on social-emotional learning? Why don't they teach us how to be independent thinkers? The supposed answer to that is, because they don't want to, because they don't want you to be independent thinkers and learners.
Mm-hmm.
They want you to follow the system and learn how to follow the system.
They want to teach you how to succeed in the system, not make the system better.
Yes.
Or make yourself better in the system.
Yeah. So I think that's an important consideration to take when trying to kind of implement better education in schools is we need to change the goal of schools.
Yeah.
Like, we need to make schools so that they teach you how to be an independent thinker and how to go against the system and change the system.
Or even, like, simple things that we should, like, why don't our schools teach us how to pay taxes, even though that's something every human does?
I know.
Why doesn't our school teach us, like, the basic rules of society? Like, why do you have to go to law school to understand laws when you can go to jail for, like...
The taxes thing, like, I don't understand the agenda behind that. Like, it seems if you want people to pay taxes, you should teach them how to, like, I don't know.
And teach them about, like, I know so many people who don't understand, like, how the bracket system works. And, like, everybody pay... You only pay brackets after, like... Being in a higher bracket doesn't mean all of your income is taxed at a higher bracket. It just means the income above that bracket. But, like,
I have no idea what you're saying, so clearly I was one of those people who did not have any idea what this is.
It's, and here's a song I think that completely reflects that. It's called Don't Stay in School.
It's wild.
I wasn't taught how to get a job, but I can remember dissecting a frog. I wasn't taught how to pay tax, but I know loads about Shakespeare's classics. I was never taught how to vote, they devoted that time to defining isotopes. I wasn't taught how to look after my health, but mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell. Never spent a lesson on current events, instead I studied the old American West. I was never taught what laws there are. I was never taught what laws there are. Let me repeat, I was not taught the laws for the country I live in. But I know how Henry VIII killed his women. Divorced, beheaded, died. Divorced, beheaded, survived. Glad that's in my head instead of financial advice. I was shown the wavelengths of different hues of light, but I was never taught my human rights. Apparently there's 30. Do you know them? I don't. Why the hell can't we both recite them? By rote I know igneous, metamorphic, and sedimentary rocks, yet I don't know squat about trading stocks or how money works at all. Where does it come from? How does the thing that motivates the world function? Not taught to budget and disperse my earnings. I was too busy there rehearsing cursive. Didn't learn how much it costs to raise a kid or what an affidavit is, but I spent days on what the quadratic equation is. Negative b plus or minus the square root of b squared minus 4ac over 2a. That's insane, that's absolutely insane. They made me learn that over basic first aid, or how to recognize the most deadly mental disorders or diseases with preventable causes, or how to buy a house with a mortgage if I could afford it, because abstract maths was deemed more important than advice that would literally save thousands of lives. But it's cool, because now I could tell you if the number of unnecessary deaths caused by that choice was prime. Never taught present-day practical medicines, but I was told what the ancient Hippocratic method is. I've got a headache, the pain is ceaseless, what should I take? Maybe try some leeches? Could we discuss domestic abuse and get the facts, or how to help my depressed friend with a mental state? No. But learn mental maths, because you won't have a calculator with you every day. They say it's not the kids, the parents are the problem. Then if you taught the kids to parent, that's the problem solved then. All this advice about using a condom, but not for when you actually have a kid with you. you want one. I'm only fluent in this language. For serious, the rest of the world speaks too. Do you think I'm an idiot? He chose the solo over the political system. So like a typical citizen, now I don't know what I'm voting on, which policies exist or how to make them change. Mais oui, je parle un peu de français. So at 18 I was expected to elect a representative for a system I had never ever ever been presented with. But I won't take it. I'll tell everyone my childhood was wasted. I'll stare at everywhere how I was educated and insist these pointless things don't stay in school.
Wow. Can we just take a moment?
What a powerful song.
So crazy.
Because I think I could name all of those, like, these are the things I learn. Like, I learned all of those things.
And I didn't learn any of the things that he was like, why didn't I learn this? I was like, ooh, true. I thought it was interesting. He said at one point, teaching children how to parent. And we talked about that in one of our shows, didn't
mm-hmm.
we?
Mm-hmm.
So cute. These connections.
Throwback.
Okay, I have a wholesome story before we kind of transition into our favorite part of the show, PSAs. But kind of going back to the idea of like social emotional learning, we read in psych that, yeah, after desegregation of schools, social psychologists thought that it was gonna be really great because, you know, when you have contact with out groups and mm-hmm. Generally improves relations, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of schools were just a disaster because there were such high tensions. And the textbook talked about, you know, it said, say you're Carlos. Carlos, you know, it's his first time in this school, and you know, Carlos is really shy. But he, whenever he raises his hand, he feels like the other kids are like judging him. So he just stops raising his hand altogether. He doesn't do well in school, etc. So they brought in a social psychologist, Elliot Aronson, and he developed this thing called the Jigsaw Classroom, where the classroom was divided. This is like elementary schools. So the classroom mm-hmm. was divided into groups of 6 students, diverse groups. So it would be like an ethnically diverse group. And each student would have like, so each group would get like a lesson assignment, but each student would learn one part of the lesson. They'd be responsible for learning that part and sharing it mm-hmm. with the other kids. So the group now had interdependence. They depended on each other to learn the information for the day that they were going to be tested on.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it said, okay, so now the other students are depending on, you know, say Carlos. And so they kind of learn to work with his shyness and learn to bring him out of his shell. And Carlos realizes that they are nice after all. And
everybody benefits from working together and from cooperating and not being afraid to like meet new people mm-hmm. and like putting aside
Everyone's
prejudice.
Learning style is kind of adjusted. Yeah, the prejudice, because you know, the book talked about how interdependence is one of the biggest ways of reducing prejudice, because you're like, okay, now I have to work with a person. And then it said, you know, Elliot Aronson received a letter, you know, X years ago that he still keeps them to this day. And the letter said, hello, Professor Aronson. Tomorrow I'm starting Harvard Law School. And, you know, you may ask, why am I writing a stranger a letter to say this? And I thought you were a stranger when I was reading your book last year for my social psychology class. And then as I was reading it, it sounded really familiar. And I realized that I was in the first ever Jigsaw classroom, and I remember you coming into the classroom and setting up the groups and all of that. And then I realized that in this book, I was the child you called Carlos, and I'm going to Harvard Law School because of you. Love, Carlos.
Oh.
Isn't that amazing?
That's amazing.
Absolutely amazing.
You know what else is amazing?
What else is amazing?
Space heater safety.
Let's go.
Okay. Space heaters can be a very effective form of supplemental heating, allowing you to stay toasty warm in an area that you spend a lot of time in, while helping you save money by keeping the rest of your home at lower temperature. However, space heaters account for 1/3 of home heating fires and 81% of home heating fire deaths. So it's important to follow the manufacturer's safety and operating instructions. In particular, keep anything that can burn, including paper, bedding, furniture, curtains, pets, and people, at least 3 feet away. Space heaters should be monitored when in operation and always turn them off before leaving your home or going to bed. Never use a portable heater in wet areas like bathrooms or if small children are expected nearby. This is a message from your fire safety-minded friends here at WRMO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
It says educational?
Yes!
Wait, I didn't even know that!
Theme connection,
yes,
Mona.
Yes, that made me feel so much better about that.
We have a book of PSAs here. How many of these were you taught in school, Mona? Things that could save your life.
Oh my god, these PSAs are absurd, Noah.
Some of them are. Fair.
Some of them are, like, really a lot.
Fair.
Some of them, fuck my soul out. Annoyed by all the noise from planes departing from Logan Airport? Wow.
Definitely should have taught that in
school.
Yeah,
why didn't they teach me that in school?
But actually, organ donations...
That's an important one.
Please donate
your
organs.
That's a really important one. Wow, I'm actually shocked that had a connection. Speaking of connections...
You mean last week's radio show topic?
Oh, yeah! Oh, yeah, I forgot that that was a thing because I was at Lexington High School.
You were connected.
No, but I have a... I know we were talking about something that is connected to one of our other shows. We were talking about traditions in schools, and by traditions, we mean Greek life. Greek life in colleges. Let's discuss.
Yes, let's.
Let's discuss this.
Another rare thing, Ramon and I agree.
Yeah, well, I mean, I agree. You have a much stronger opinion than me.
Fair, fair.
I have like a, you know, I wouldn't be mad if Greek life was abolished, but I also am not terribly mad that it exists. I'm like, okay, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Noah, on the other hand, is definitely for abolishing
Greek. Yeah, it's...
Tell us.
Okay, so Greek life... maintains traditions of Greek life is sort of built on exclusion.
True.
And sort of like a private social club. In the past, that was much more based on race. I mean, very much still based on gender, which I think is just something that liberal arts educations and colleges, which are all for sort of like inclusivity, like should trying to resist. And there are co-ed frat sororities, I didn't even know what they're called anymore.
Frats,
co-ed frats, I guess.
Okay.
Which I guess are better, but I mean, for the most part, they still have this culture of sort of like exclusion, and although hazing isn't supposed to exist, I think
it still
definitely does to some capacity, to different capacities. I mean, just a few years ago, Tufts
had a huge
wake-up call, sort of.
Pretty bad.
And I feel like it's not wrong to say that probably around the country, similar things are still happening.
For sure. Yeah, I think it's one of those things where if Greek life didn't exist and someone proposed it, people would be like,
why?
What? Why? The only reason it continues to exist is because of the tradition around
it. And because of the immense amounts of money. That's something crazy.
Yeah, that's also true.
At the like, I mean, because like each Greek life building on campus has like a parent, sort of like they're all connected. Like you can find the same frats on different campuses, mm-hmm. and there's like a national chapter of the frat that have like millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Wow!
Because I mean, frats are a good way to get connections to wealthy businessmen who have money and who will donate back and. It's like this pipeline to success, but it's an exclusive pipeline to success that you have to pay to be a part of.
That's crazy.
That you have to be selected by your peers, but they're peers who like have been carrying on this legacy, so they're not they're sort of different from peers because they have like this privilege of being already in the fraternity. I don't know. I think it's just. Just let them die. They're done. It's time for them to be gone.
Okay, so how do we let them die in a way where people don't get mad about it? It's impossible, right? Because the thing is, when... The other thing, though, is something... I know that at Tufts, there's a really, like, the party culture. There's a lot of sports houses that throw kind of big parties that frats in the past threw, but then when Tufts kind of went through the whole frat scandal situation, the sports house has kind of stepped in, quote unquote, to throw, you know, toxic parties where, I remember during our pre-orientation, someone asked one of our leaders, you know, okay, between us, where are the parties that maybe we should avoid? And she was like, some of these sports houses are...
I mean, I tried to go to a lacrosse house during orientation week, and awful. And I heard about awful things that were going on.
But so then, kind of what I'm thinking is, you know, if we abolished Greek life, would it just exist in another form? Would it just exist underground?
I think what would come up and replace it is the special interest housing and sort of like Rainbow House or like...
You think that would...
I mean, German House of, or like...
I think those are different.
I think... I mean, Crafts House already throws parties, which I know you're not the biggest fan of, but...
No, but that's not what I mean. I'm not saying, like, who would throw the parties. I mean, who would become exclusive, promote toxic behavior? I think that... Like, I guess, okay, what I'm leading to is part of me, I always am pro-reform versus, quote-unquote... I mean, reform versus revolution. In this case, I don't know if revolution is the right word, but I do think that the efforts to reform Greek life can be really positive. And I think that Greek life doesn't have to be all bad. I think that there are some, you know, good things about it, like community, quote unquote.
Although, I mean, isn't it
good philanthropy, which, you know, is philanthropy good is a whole other discussion. But
or is it good that we need philanthropy, I think.
Yeah. But I guess what I'm saying is part of me, yeah, looks at lacrosse house and like hockey house and is like, some of the frats have safer, like, the parties there are safer.
Although, I mean, to be fair, is it kind of telling that, like, the frat houses are on these, like, very high, like, still regulated, because they are, like, very regulated
very
in what they're allowed to do,
yeah.
Like, that in order to have these, like, sort of better, like, party atmospheres, you, like, need intense regulation, and, like, if you didn't,
I guess how
like,
I
if
see,
the frats were set free again, like, would things just get worse?
How I see the intense regulation is, like, to change the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And then once
and
the culture
has changed, then you don't need it.
Then you don't need the regulation, and the hope is that the culture has changed, and the culture will continue to be, you know, good. And I think it's funny that we're having this discussion at Tufts, where Greek life is really not that prevalent. It's pretty low-key.
Yeah.
I can't even... But, okay, it's quote-unquote not prevalent and pretty low-key, but it still does. I mean, you hear about frat parties. And
oh, yeah.
People, like, it's not non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
So I am curious what it's like to go to a school where, like, 60% of the population...
I think that'd be just crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like some people go to, like, places like University of Alabama, like, just to get into, like, a frat.
A girl on Facebook, I remember she wrote a Facebook post saying, hello, I am at whatever, like, University of Georgia, I think. She said, I am rushing for X, Y, and Z, and I need letters of recommendation. So if you're an alum of one of these sororities, I'm, like, I would love a letter of recommendation from you. And I was like,
what?
Girl. I was like, what
are you doing?
It was so weird.
That's
and yeah,
crazy.
The people who go to the college for a specific fraternity or a sorority, I'm like,
Because, I mean, I don't know about you, but on every single one of my, like, college campus tours, they, like, mentioned it.
Yeah.
Like, every time I visited a school, they were always, like, just, like, somebody would either ask or just the tour guide would, like, have part of the script being, like, this is how we do Greek, like, life here, this percentage of the student, like, which is just like weird that's like
that's so prevalent.
Metric that exists.
Yeah, that's a good point. It is such a metric, and people say, oh, I chose this school because it didn't have, like, for Tufts, a lot of people are like, I liked that Tufts didn't have all this group.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like that Tufts doesn't like super focus on sports, and like a big lure for me was like research, and like I was like, I would prefer Tufts if it didn't have Greek life, you know,
yeah.
Like.
And something kind of, again, this is going back to what we were talking about earlier, something I really liked about Tufts was this idea of kind of you know, an academically challenging environment, but mm-hmm. not in direct competition with other students, that the environment feels, at least so far as young freshmen, kind of very supportive and like we're all just trying to do our own thing. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge problem in high schools.
Oh,
especially
definitely.
In my high school, the stress and competition was just off the charts. Crazy levels of yeah. competition. Everything was
everybody is I guess most people, the people that we interacted with in our like sort of advanced tracks, I would say in high school, everybody was trying to get into the top colleges, trying to get the best like scholarships, trying mm-hmm. to be the best at like one or two things. And I mean, not everybody can go to the same school. Yeah. Not everybody yeah. can go and get the best scholarship.
Yeah.
Like people just have to lose, kind of.
Okay, so can we talk about the college admissions process now? Because the last time I tried to bring it up, I was shut down.
I will not shut you down once more.
Okay. So I think the college admissions process is insane. Like, it's just so weird. It's like you literally have to just sell yourself. Like, when you're applying for a job, you're like, I'd be good for this job because mm-hmm. of my skills in this job area. When you're applying to college, you're like, love me.
Yeah.
And take me as a person, and my application and my submission or like admission or rejection is a reflection of me as an individual.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Yeah. The past 18 years of my life on this paper in front of you.
So
please take me.
Oh my God. I do not miss that at all. I think it's also one of those things where it's like being in college is challenging, but it's rewarding. Like you're like, oh okay, like this is challenging but I'm growing as a person, or like this is challenging but I'm learning. The college admissions process is just emotionally draining and does not feel rewarding,
and everybody knows it.
Everyone hates it.
And
I don't
it's
know
just
how to improve
do.
It though, because you know, on the one hand it's like people like applying to schools like in Canada because it's just test scores.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, we just had a conversation about how there's too much emphasis on standardized testing. Like I like that the American college system doesn't, you know, tries to consider who you are as a person.
I wish instead of us having to like really pick colleges, I know this is how it sometimes works for like sports, is like colleges are like, we'll recruit you. Why can't colleges recruit me for like winning the science fair?
Oh, no.
Or like recruit me for like,
so much.
Like
oh, no.
If colleges came for us instead of us having to go for colleges, that would be a dream.
True, but the numbers don't work that way.
But
there's more kids who want to go to a college space in the college. So, also, I mean, if we're talking about,
I mean, it's definitely not reasonable because the colleges would go to like the well-performing schools.
So that's actually a terrible idea.
Well, I mean, I think even now, like if you look at, I mean, people can hire like people who will tutor them on how to like apply to college. I think the system now is pretty broken also.
Oh, it's terrible.
I'm just
it's
saying,
terrible.
From my experience, it would have been nice if somebody came to me and was like, hey, Noah, you should come to Tufts. We want you here. Instead of just like 50... And I have 8,000 emails. I think probably like 60% of those are like college... Probably like 70% of them are...
Did you get emails from Swarthmore ever?
I got
Swarthmore?
Emails, yes,
they
from Swarthmore. From so many
colleges. Emails. Do you remember? It'd be like Selena Gomez's new song, and it'd be like, "Hi, we're Swarthmore. We're glad you opened this. You should apply."
Ow.
They were all
what?
So, oh my God, they were so funny. I'm sorry. Talk about something.
Okay. I would be amiss if I did not talk about education in prison. It is such a critical thing. We need just so much more of it. It is currently like a trend for degree programs in colleges or in prisons, but the impact that education there's a measurable impact that education has on the lives of incarcerated people in reducing recidivism rates and increasing opportunities once they're released. And I urge everybody listening, if you can get involved with a system like PD Green, which lets you tutor incarcerated people. I just finished a semester of PD Green. It was an amazing experience. My the person I was tutoring passed the HISET. I'm so proud, which is like the GED equivalent.
That's awesome.
So exciting. Aww. You can really have an impact on people's lives. Get involved, donate. PD Green is, I think, all along the East Coast. There's all sorts of other programs, like mentoring programs, or just supporting or encouraging your university to adopt a college program. I mean, Tufts is beginning the TUPIT, the Tuppet program, which is a degree program for incarcerated people in MCI Concord. So people in prison will be able to get degrees from Tufts, which is very exciting.
That's so
and
cool. I didn't know that.
Truly life-changing. It's starting up next year, I think. No, I think it starts next semester, which is so exciting. And then in 3 years, they'll have degrees. So.
Well, again, I spent that time looking for the emails from Swarthmore, but it seems like a bit of a choppy transition now. I feel like now I feel bad being like this is so, hello Mona. Sad news. This is the last time we'll be sending this message to you. Feel free to weep a little if you are so moved. We've been at this for a while now. Us sending you brochures and emails, you reading them briefly and giving an occasional nod of approval or disdain before shuffling them into the recycling bin. We are realists, Mona. May we assume that one of the following is true? 1. You are planning to apply to Swarthmore. 2. No way. Know how you're applying to Swarthmore. You loathe intellectual stimulation and shudder at the thought of life in an actual arboretum. The thought of graduating from a surprisingly affordable college with a strong financial aid policy is somehow distasteful to you.
This is so uncomfortable.
3. No, it's so funny. 3. You are on the proverbial fence. You might say tomato or you might say tomato. You may apply, you may not. And then it continues. I think it's
that's
genius.
Too much. I hate that.
No, it's so funny. One of the subject lines is you plus us equals smiley face. Hello, Mona. We'll be brief. Okay, that's easier said than done. We'll be brief-ish. You make us happy, and we think a Swarthmore education could make you happy, too. Anyway.
Interesting. So. Well, glad
oh, my God. Dear Mona, David Bowie saying, ch-ch-ch-changes. Are you a big fan of change?
Can we not... That, no, let's end this.
I'm sorry. Okay, yeah.
That distressed
me. I'm sorry that came after your very powerful request for better public engagement in the
incarceration system. Yeah.
Situation.
The education system.
Okay, we have like 10 minutes left. We have another song that we want to kind of, let me see, I want to pick a song.
High School Never Ends, possibly?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. It's pretty deep. Let's play it.
Sure thing. Sounds like a plan, Mona. this song coming up is by Bowling for Soup, who actually did all the music for Phineas and Ferb.
What?
Isn't that crazy? Well, a lot of the music for Phineas and Ferb.
Oh.
Isn't that something?
Oh my god, that was...
Phineas and Ferb is a TV show,
that
a cartoon.
That was all about it being being intellectually stimulated over your summer vacation.
Yes.
So, it was very pro-education. That's so funny.
Sure. This is High School Never Ends.
Official.
That is High School Never Ends by Bowling for Soup.
And honestly, now that you said the Phineas and Ferb thing, they totally sound like Phineas and Ferb. I love that. That's interesting. That song reminded me of an article I read junior year that pretty much had the opposite, like, quote-unquote thesis. The idea of that song was that... the idea of the article was that the reason that all of these kind of like fake social structures exist in high school is because it's kind of like the only time in your life where you're grouped by the people who are your age,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to your interests, because in your job, it's like everyone
your interests.
Has the same goal and interest, and there's a range of ages. So it's stratified by like boss, employee, et cetera, but mm-hmm. also like, you know, skill, level, like talent, whatever. But in high school, it's like you're just, the only thing you have in common is your age, because all your interests are lumped together and everything. So this leads to you being like, this leads to kind of these superficial ideas of like popularity based on like who's the most attractive, who mm-hmm. looks, you know, who's the sportiest.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way people have to kind of classify and stratify each other.
Interesting.
Whereas this is arguing that life is just like that.
Yeah. Everybody all the time is just sort of competing and who's the best at this or that.
That's true. I would say that's totally true.
Yeah.
Interesting. My mom, sometimes when I would talk about high school, she'd be like, "Oh, I'm so glad I'm not in high school anymore." But then other times she'd be like,
"Honestly,
at other times when I'd be complaining about it, she'd be like, "Honestly, like this is the author world as well." Because my mom is an author.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of drama in the author world.
Who knew?
I knew.
Because that was your upbringing.
Yes, the author world is crazy. But it is an interesting song.
Definitely.
Okay, what are the last 5 minutes? What do we want to hit? We talked...
A lightning
we
round.
We talked a lot.
Yeah.
We did really well.
Do you want to talk about Sunday's test at all?
I feel like we talked about them. What else?
High school stress.
Ooh, that's a good one. That ties into a lot of the things we talked about, because, like... Again, if we had better emotional support in our schools, mm-hmm. it'd be less stressed.
If we had a better college application system. Mm-hmm.
But the idea, my junior English teacher made a really good point. He was like, the whole thing in high school now has become stress is bad. Stress is bad. I'm mm-hmm. stressed. That's bad. And he was like, I'm stressed all the time. I'm stressed about my job. I'm stressed about my family.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not, you know, you don't want to be stressed all the time, but the idea that the experience of stress is a bad thing
is unfair, because there can be good stress.
There is good
stress.
Yeah.
Can be productive, and yeah. it can be emotionally enriching. Like,
yeah, and sometimes it's just necessary. Again, mm-hmm. if you're always stressed, that's bad. But now it's gotten, I feel like, to the point where the second anyone feels the slightest bit of anything, they're like, I'm stressed.
Well, I challenge that, and I say, I think a lot of people are just stressed all the time in high school.
Fair, but the question is why, right? Because...
I think pressure. I think there's a lot of pressure to succeed.
I think it's the culture, because I think, again, my high school had a huge stress problem. Just the mm-hmm. student population was... The mental health of the student population was just poor. But there was always some sort of like, okay, haha, what we need is less homework. Okay, we're going to have a stricter homework policy, and then... Okay, everyone's still stressed. Even more stricter homework policy. Less and less homework. But we still want to be the best school. Haha. Like, instead of talking about what is it about the culture of this school that's making everyone stressed? Like,
mm-hmm.
what is it about? Where is the pressure coming from? Is it coming from peers? Is it coming from teachers? Is it coming from family? I think the idea that, like, if I have 30 minutes of homework, I won't be stressed. But if I have an mm-hmm. hour, I will. I don't think it's measured like that. I think that's something my high school had a really big problem with, was, you know, part of it is in your control. Like, you can sometimes, you know, other times it's out of your control, but mm-hmm. sometimes you can determine how much you're going to, you know,
if you're going to
let something stress you out or not. And if you can't, then that's like a sign of you know, it's a...
You need to get better. That's a skill problem. You need to practice.
But if everyone is stressed all the time, I don't know, maybe...
I think
it compounds on itself.
Yeah, definitely. Am I not stressed? Like, sometimes I'm like, I'm not stressed enough. Like, what's wrong?
Oh my God, I feel that too.
That's a problem.
That's a problem.
We shouldn't be that way.
I think we all need to just
let
go, try our best.
But you know what? Something we should never stop stressing about. The environment. It's dying. We need to save it. I was afraid I wasn't going to get a throw it in. Perfect. Save the planet. Go vegan. Go vegetarian. Stop eating meat. Eating meat is the best way you individually can reduce environmental impact.
Randomly at the end yelling stop eating meat is not going to be effective.
We need anything we can get, Mona. That's my take.
Well, I think on that uplifting note, we'll be back next week for our last show of the semester. We're going to end with Break the Rules
by Charlie XCX. This is Mona and Noah Save the World, and you're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio.